राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay. Text 13. Desha kaladikam sarvam mayaya vikritam sada maya tishtasya vishvasya sarvam tachchit svarupakam. The time, place, and everything else of the material world is a grotesque perversion created by Maya. In the world far away from Maya's world, everything is made of spirit. Commentary, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The spiritual world is far from Maya. The material world is created by Maya. What is the relationship of these two worlds? To this question we answer, the time, place, and everything else in the material world is a grotesque perversion. However, the time, place, and everything else of the spiritual world, far from Maya, are all spiritual. This means that everything there is supremely pure. In that grotesque material world, there are many obstacles to happiness. Therefore, it is seen that the material world is very grotesque and horrible. In the material world, time is divided into past, present, and future. By that division, many things are destroyed and many kinds of sufferings are created. In this way, the material world is filled with many horrible and grotesque things. Therefore, the whole material world is horrible and grotesque. In the spiritual, according to Jaimini, anything repeated many times is very important. In the spiritual world, time, place, and everything else are all spiritual. Everything there is full of bliss. Everything there is full of love. In the spiritual world, there is not even the slightest fragrance of matter. The spiritual world is gracefully described in these words of the Chandogya Upanishad's 8th chapter. Hari Om. In the heart of this spiritual city is a lotus abode. The internal part of that abode should be sought. That part one should desire to know. If they, the students, ask, what does it mean that in the heart of this spiritual city is a lotus abode? The internal part of that abode should be sought. And what part? And that part one should desire to know. Then he, the guru, may say, as in the external world there is sky, so inside this heart there is also a sky. In both the external world and within the heart there are heaven and earth. In both are fire and air. In both are sun and moon, lightning and stars. Whatever is in the external world and whatever is not in the external, whatever is in the external world and whatever is not in the external world is present in the heart. And so in other words, whatever is here and more. Means, in other words, what's here is there, but what's not here is also there. So eternity, knowledge, bliss, all these things are not here. Those are there. But at the same time, the form, activities, everything that goes on, the idea, the concepts of relationships and interaction, that's all there. Right? Because one may say, but then you get both here. No, because the one cancels. Eternity cancels temporariness. Right? So that means if you add in eternity, knowledge, and bliss, that removes all the temporariness, all the lack of knowledge or ignorance, and all the unhappiness. Right? So then those forms that are here in relationships, then that is... Does that make sense? Yeah. If in this spiritual city all material elements and desires are assembled, Then when the body reaches old age or is destroyed at death, what remains after that? Then he, the guru, may say, it is not withered by old age, it is not killed by death. The spiritual city is eternal. Within it are all desires. The soul is free from sin, old age, death, lamentation, hunger, and thirst, and its desires and thoughts are automatically fulfilled. As by following good advice, people attain their desires, so the spiritualists also attain their desires, right? So the desires are easily obtained because in the spiritual world, everything's in connection to Krishna. So you want to do things in connection to Krishna, so those are easily obtained. Right here, the difficulty comes is that what you're trying to obtain is Krishna without acknowledging Krishna. You know, it's just like, let's say, I want to come into your house without acknowledging you. Right? So there's going to be all kinds of obstacles. You know what I'm saying? You know, there's going to be lots of, noise pollution. There will be, and what would they correct me to? You know, compromisation of my personal space. You know, there may be more baseball bats than I, you know, had planned on bumping into in the day. You know, I'm saying all these things that go on, and I just want to, you know, sit down and watch the television and go check out what's in the refrigerator, and right. So naturally, it's going to be a problem. But if you're friends with somebody and everything is a connection with them, then it's not a problem. So that's the whole thing. The material world belongs to God. It's all potencies. It's mechanics. Everything is going on by His potencies. But we're trying to enjoy it without acknowledging His presence. It's not like, oh, well, you mean you think of God or you don't. Okay, that's the beginning stage of the understanding of God consciousness. But the point is even the thought process is Krishna's potency that's making it happen. So everything that you want to do, you even want to sit down, just that the power of locomotion, the how the joints and muscles work, the airs, everything, that's all Krishna's potency. That a chair will actually hold you off the floor, that the floor will actually hold up the chair, you know. You know what I'm saying? Because without acknowledging God, you know, I think it's Hume, he already fell through the floor, right? But, you know, but the point is it's all going on. So all that's happening, but we're just thinking something as simple as just sit down, but it's still God's involved, right? So if that's acknowledged, then things become very easy. It's when you don't acknowledge that, then naturally. Not that God cares that you don't acknowledge. The point is, because he's God, he's unlimited. So our 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair, little bit of independence is not actually going to, ruin his day, right? So the problem comes is that being part and parcel of him, then he cares for us. And he's an anxiety that we are not understanding the position. So one may say, no, but you know, how come God would do that and make us unhappy? But the point is that unhappiness is only to wake us up to what is real happiness. You know, if we're out in the backyard eating mud and the mother's trying to tell us not to eat mud, you know, and creating obstacles to that, and she's inviting us into the house for dinner, right? So is that by her stopping you eating mud, then that's a bad thing? Oh, she's so mean, she's so cruel, how come God doesn't fulfill all my material desires? Because like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, what was it? Even though he said it so many times, grotesque, what was the other thing? Horrible. Yes, horrible and grotesque, right? You know, so everything's very gross and, you know, over the top there. And you don't even get anything nice out of it because everything is so self-centered, right? As we see in the systems, we're taking within the material, you know, the selfish, the selfish, atheistic immoralist, right? As far as someone said, in an immoralist. I think some of the French philosophers were immoralists by, you know, determination, like that. You know, so there, then you're convincing that by we're cooperating together, it's better than by adding God into it, than by adding God in actually as a person. Right? And then understanding the nature of the soul, then taking up that service on that transcendental platform. So you're going through this process. So, but now, it sounds like to us, just as we're going through, that each one's kind of like an equal step. But we see it so much greater just going from the selfishness to selflessness. Then when you add in the whole element of God, it broadens the horizon so much. Then it's a matter of actually trying to serve. You add in the whole Vedic culture, add in the knowledge of the soul. So each one is dynamically greater than the last. So then you add in the spiritual. So that little bit of incremental difference within the material is not much. So therefore, you know, it has this... Because ultimately, in the material world, people are following these first four only for themselves. So that makes it basically kind of horrible. Because it's not that they really do care about others. Right? You know, on a cooperative platform that creates more happiness for themselves. You know what I'm saying? Like the person is saying, no, but you know, we all live together and we're harmonious together and all that. It sounds very nice, but they're saying all that because of the happiness they get from it. It's not that they're not getting anything from it and everybody else is getting something from it and then they're happy. No, they're tasting that also. So the whole material world is self-centered and the whole material world is based on not acknowledging God. So if you don't acknowledge God, you're not acknowledging the finer aspects. So therefore it's very grotesque. Because it's self-centered and it's not actually, you know, caring, you know, how you say, sharing and is caring, kind of. So it's horrible, you know, the whole thing. So it just appears that you're going through these stages. But just as you've gone up, you can go down. But once you come to the spiritual, now here, then being awakened to all these elements, to, you know, what is the general mood, like that, you know, trying to assist the others in that mood, right? So those levels of going through the same understanding, then that gives all spiritual results, right?
Huh.
That's all. That's all. It means you may come to the fourth stage, that Vigyan, but it's just a matter of time, because you get frustrated with that, then you move into Buddhism. So then there's voidist. And so all that leaves actually is just the senses. And then it will just drop down to the bottom again, and then, you know, slowly. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, so you see, like, you know, so you can, if you look at it, Shankaracharya, he's taking the Buddhists and moving them back into jnanis. Because normally the Buddhists will go forward into karmis. Right? So then that's, you know, quite a step. At the same time is Buddha himself moved them from karmis to Buddhists without the platform of jnana in between. So now it's just Shankaracharya comes and fills in the blank. You know? Yes.
And Prabhupada points out a lot of these impersonalists, they come back to the platform of doing philanthropy work and altruism.
Yes. Even the Buddhists, their only way that they're getting any taste is by the philanthropy. Because see, the disturbances of the mind and the what's around them, when they do their meditation, then they'll be freed from that anxiety. So that will make them, that will give that little bit of peace that they consider nice. But if they focus just on that nirvana, it's not going to give any happiness. Right? Because there's nothing there for the soul. There's just emptiness. So how will the soul relate to emptiness? You know, that's just not going to happen. So that chit means that there's knowledge and activity. That will produce ananda. But just from sat doesn't produce ananda. Right? There has to be interaction. There has to be... So just the element of sat, that's just existence... You know, if somebody just looks at his existence, right, just the facts without, you know, knowledge, and interactions. You know, you get up in the morning, you know, you're tired like that, you don't want to get up, you know, you go and have to, you know, drink some coffee that's not, you know, it's not necessarily very tasty because it's just black because you're so tired. Then, you know, there's no time, you have to rush out, then go and get stuck in traffic in some form or another in your own car, in one filled with other people because, you know, you're, what do you call that?
Carpooling,
right? You know, or you're on a bus or a train like that, you know, packed in with people, you're going to be there for some time, then you're going to sit in an office, a little boring cubicle, doing work you don't really want to do. Right, and surrounded by other people that don't want to be doing the same work, and they're just, they're also grumpy, so they're not nice to be with, like that. And you know, then you're going to come back in the evening, the same process. Then you're going to come home, and you just like to relax and all that. But then it's time to interact with the family, right? So you know, the night the men, you know, get more tired, but the women, that's when they wake up. You know, the emotions and all these kind of things. So then that whole dynamic is there. Does that make sense? You know, so if you put in time there, then you're going to be tired in the morning. If you don't put in time there, then, you know, just life is hell. So you're still going to be tired in the morning. Okay, that's existence. Where's the Ananda? You understand? But if you add in the proper knowledge and that of the relationships and the interactions, then, you know, interacting with the family, you know, doing all these different things, and this is, you know, the sacrifice you're making to, for the family and that, and they're making their sacrifices and all that, then you can get some happiness from it. You understand? So that's the whole point, is existence only, meditating on existence can't give you happiness. So that's the problem. So that's why to get any taste of Buddhism, then they have to do some philanthropy. You know, same with the Shankarites, and that they always have to do something.
It's interesting because the karma you're describing, he takes a vacation. He goes on holiday.
Yeah.
Buddhism is kind of like a vacation for the philosophical vacation. Just you take a break from all activity.
Yeah. Well, that's basically what it is. You know, karma and jnana, you just take a break from it.
Yeah.
Like that.
Come back refreshed.
Yeah. A new karma, nouveau karma.
Yeah.
Yes.
You said with the sambandha, it doesn't give any taste.
Just sambandha without the concept of relationship. You know, because sambandha gyan also, that's what I was saying, if it's just shankarshan. Because Prajumna means you know, what's the attitude, and then the Vasudeva has the interaction, the Aniruddha, the what goals you can get, what experiences. So those three being left out, then there's no rasa. And if there's no rasa, the soul can't actually find happiness.
So to come to the Prajumna, there has to be some conception of the goal?
Yes. There has to be something there. Then you're inspired. You know, that's why he's inspired to go to work and all that, even though he doesn't like to work, because then, you know, the time with the family, what he can do, the future, you know, so many things like this. He can go on vacation, you know, you can work very hard so that you can actually go on vacation. If you didn't work hard, you wouldn't have to go on vacation. You'd be on permanent vacation. You know what I'm saying? So the man could do that. Problem is the ladies can't handle that because there's no variety. So to create variety, then you have to have, you know, do work so you can have a vacation. Right? Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, there's this alternative elements. Hope that wasn't too stark, that last one. You ever thinking the previous ones are stark? No, those weren't stark. Those were just, okay, the last one, that was stark. Then just as the fruits of work in this lifetime are all ultimately destroyed, in the same way the benefits in the next life also all ultimately destroyed. One who does not understand the nature of the soul remains unfulfilled and unsatisfied. Because your thinking is that I am this, but then this is falling apart. Right? It's just like, if you think you're the body, then as the body falls apart, you have problem. Right? You know, ordinary people, they have problem. But let's say celebrities, they have more problem. Right? Especially if this, you know, their celebrityness is based on the body. You know, like that. Even though he may have, well, I mean, it's the quality of the body. It's always based on the body. Yeah, attractiveness and stuff like that. Even though he may attain all his desires, his soul remains unfulfilled and unsatisfied, even though he may attain all his desires. Because even though you attain it, then the point is what are you left with? Because you're thinking, I will go through this process, and I will get a result. Okay? But the result is in dead matter. Right? It's something you can, you know, hold in your hand or look at, or maybe your house is too big to hold in your hand. At least you can touch it or something. Right? Now, the process you go through, right? You're going to go through, that's dealing with the mechanics of the material world. Okay? So what are you in contact with when you're dealing with the mechanics?
Matter?
No, I'm saying you're dealing with matter, but what makes the mechanics work?
The laws of Krishna.
Yes, Krishna, yeah. Right? So in other words, when you perform in the activity, you're in touch with Krishna, mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Then you get your result, which is in matter. Mm-hmm. So then there's no Krishna. So how you'll be satisfied? Right? You're inspired doing the work because of that. You're inspired thinking, when I get that, I'll be happy. But all it is removing the pain. So it's not positive. That's what Prabhupada says, the material is not positive. Spiritual is positive. Because you're going through the activity thinking of Krishna, you're obtaining Krishna. So you have something. But at the end, the materialist, he only has dead matter. You know what I'm saying? In other words, let's say one is attracted even, say, by the child, right? So the child is active and interactive. So those potencies of childness, right, that you're interacting with are there. So you're actually in touch with Krishna. So that's the taste. But now when you get the child and you're holding the child, then you only have dead matter. So unless you're contemplating qualities of the child or something, just having the child there in your arms is just dead matter. So, therefore, you're not in contact with Krishna anymore. You understand? So, where will the satisfaction of the soul be? So, that's the whole thing. You have the car, okay. But unless you drive the car, or unless you can show off the car, or do something, any of those things, then you're in contact with the Lord's potencies. Then you're getting a taste. Otherwise, you just are always stuck with dead matter. So, you have this house full of dead matter. And the house itself is dead matter, so unless you interact with it, you're not in touch with Krishna. You know, so either on the physical platform, the mental platform, something, even, like, you know, where you're intellectualizing about how this is Krishna, still you're in contact with Krishna because you're seeing Krishna. That's why you get a taste. So that's why the karmi, the gyan get a taste because they're in contact with Krishna. But at the end of the day, once they get to what their so-called goals are, they're not in contact with Krishna. Yes, you have to make a new goal. So that's why the process is dynamic, has to go on. So this idea of the Buddhism the impersonalism or the voidism can't actually satisfy materialism either, because you always end up with nothing. Right? Because for the soul, dead matter is as good as nothing. The Brahman, okay, that's Sat, okay. But where's the Chitananda to create the happiness? Because they say Brahmananda, but where's the Ananda? Unless there's interaction. Right? Right? And then voidism, then there's absolutely nothing. You don't even have matter. Right? The one, at least you have dead matter. The other one, at least you have Brahman. But in voidism, you don't have either. So that's even more frustrating. Right? That, therefore, anger. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's nothing there for the soul. That's why then they can't be satisfied. Does this make sense? It's very straightforward mechanical. It's not a sentimental element.
Yeah.
This is just actual mechanics. That's why if you don't know the soul, very hard to understand all these things.
Does that mean there's more taste for the soul, even if it may be somewhat painful, in trying to achieve a goal than when they actually get the goal?
Yeah, because once you get the goal, then it's just like this. People work their whole life to retire, and then when they retire, yeah, they go back to work. Right? Because they just get bored. Right? Because the point is as soon as you get a goal, the goal you wanted is only that I'm retired, I'm not doing anything. Right? Or I have money, it's a security, so there's just money there. But it's not your... So if you're thinking about, okay, the security, the money, that security element is Krishna. But otherwise, it's just money. It's just, you know, piles of notes sitting there, or numbers in the book, or on the computer. Where's the taste? Right? That moves back now to Sankarshan, or Prajumna. Right? So unless you see it in relationship to another goal, then it just moves back into existence. And that's when people start freaking out. That's when they freak. Like midlife crisis means that you simply look at your existence. Right? Because you before that, then you were looking at a goal. But now midlife, that means you either attained it or see it can't be attained. Right? In other words, you're there or too far away. So then you're looking at it in reality, which is just facts. So it says Sankarshan. So that inspiration is gone. So now you have to think of some way to become inspired so that you'll rethink and reorganize until you create a new goal. And then you can work. Right? So the Vedic system is that new goal should be spiritual life, you know, vanaprastha.
Not another mirage,
yeah. Or not a consultancy. You know what I'm saying? You know, or a new family or, you know, something. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's mechanically, it just doesn't work. The soul is trying to think, yes, I'm getting something here, but you're not, because the dead matter, the interaction of dead matter with dead matter doesn't care. You know, it's like getting the two rocks. Hey, how are you today? Yes, I'm fine. Yes, you're looking very white today. Yes. And you're looking that very pleasant, you know, whatever it is, more bluish color. Yes. They don't care, you know. You know, say, so adults always think it's very amusing watching the small children with their dolls and different things. And, you know, the girls, it's, you know, there's marriages going on and that. And the boys, there's wars going on and like that. So then, but the point is this, oh, that's child play. But that's adults are doing exactly the same thing. Right? It's just that they're more an illusion. And the kids are more independent because they'll put in that energy. Well, the adults, it has to be put in for them. I mean, someone's the leader, they put it in, you know. Does that make sense? So at some point when they look at it realistically, you know, like becoming just go, it's just a bunch of dolls. They're not alive. They're dead. You know, Barbie just doesn't care. Ken doesn't care. They're just plastic. You know, you shatter the kid's whole world because what you've done is only, you've just exposed to them just existence. And that existence is, you know, horrible and grotesque. Does that make sense? You know, so, but the adults, then they think that's real. But if they do that to themselves, their life, then what's this? It's the same. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so then you try to get rid of everything, right? So they go out, they get intoxicated or something, try to forget everything. People join the Foreign Legion anymore? Not
sure.
Huh?
Because
that was one of those things, you go there to forget. You know?
French problem.
Yeah. Okay. One who does not understand the nature of the soul remains unfulfilled and unsatisfied because he doesn't understand the process that's going on, even though he may attain all his desires. He does not attain the spiritual world on the death of the body. One who understands the nature of the soul remains becomes satisfied and fulfilled because he knows actually what he's dealing with. Because the point is therefore the desires you have, the desires can't fulfill your, make the soul happy. Point is that fulfillment of your desires for the devotee means those are areas of activity that he can engage in Krishna service, right? Some medium. Does that make sense? You know, someone likes art, so then they do art for Krishna, or likes family life, so their family, they engage their family in Krishna service, right? Someone likes to manage, they engage the managing in Krishna service. So the same thing's going on, but the goal is Krishna. And so as long as you're not focused on that material, the external element, means the external element is what you're working with, so naturally you need more, you know, more. Means if you want to continue an activity, you have to have resources, right? So, in other words, the dealing with the external energy should produce more external energy to work with, right? So if you're managing, at the end of the management, you know, operation, you should still have some resources to work with. If having managed in such a way, no one wants to manage with you, and you've been, you know, the temple councilors remove you as the temple president, then you don't have much, you know, resources left to work with. You understand? So that's why you're doing this, because you maintain the resources, because that's your medium of interaction. But its point is, it's only useful for the interaction. It's not that it is the goal. You know? Does that make sense? You know, same with the family, same with money, same with position, same with anything. Right? So he becomes satisfied and fulfilled, even though he's fulfilling all his, you know, regular desires. That's why it's explained in Gita, how karma yoga, jnana yoga, which are the things that keep you, I mean, karma and jnana, what keep you in the material world, but connecting them to the Lord, they free you from the material world. Right? But there's still, there's Shuddha Bhakti. Right? Because that's what will maintain you in the spiritual world. But you're engaging, it's like Prabhupada says, a thorn takes out a thorn. Like that. He obtains all his desires in this world. He attains the spiritual world on the death of the body. So it's just, it's perfect. The yoga, the Buddha yoga process is perfect. If he desires to go to Pitri Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Pitris appear before him. They take him to Pitri Loka and he becomes happy. Right? Means you have these desires and you go there and you'll learn about the Lord. You know, Yamaraj is a devotee. These desires to go to Matri Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Matris appear before him. They take him to Matri Loka and he becomes happy. He desires to go to Bratri Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Bratris appear before him. They take him to Bratri Loka and he becomes happy. He desires to go to Swastri Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Swastris appear before him. They take him to Swastri Loka and he becomes happy. If he desires to go to Sakhi Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Sakhis appear before him. They take him to Sakhi Loka and he becomes happy. If he desires to go to Gandhamalya Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Gandhamalyas appear before him. They take him to Gandhamalya Loka. He becomes happy. If he desires to go to Anapana Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Anapanas appear before him. They take him to Anapana Loka and he becomes happy. If he desires to go to Gita Vaditra Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Gita Vaditras appear before him. They take him to Gita Vaditra Loka and he becomes happy. If he desires to go to Stri Loka, simply by that desire alone, the Stris appear before him. They take him to Stri Loka and he becomes happy. Whatever he desires appears simply by his desiring it. In this way, he becomes happy. When the real spiritual desires of that soul are covered by false material desires, the soul is not able to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead after death. Both in this life and the next, they who desire something other than spiritual happiness never attain the fulfillment of their desire. Their real spiritual desires are covered by material illusion. Right, so If you desire anything other than spiritual happiness, you will always not be happy. Because the only thing that's actually working in this world is the Lord's potency. Right? So, the thing is his potency is his transcendental potency. But, so Maya means she covers the understanding of that. And so then you see the matter. You understand? Because Krishna only works with his internal potency. So it's his internal potency that transforms. But Maya makes that you don't see this. You see this, then you're dealing with the spiritual. Even though it's transformed, you know that this is the transformation of Krishna's internal potency. Right? Then you're on the transcendental platform. You're working with Yoga Maya. Right? But if you don't see that, that's the influence of Mahamaya, is that you can't see that. Right? Does that make sense? So then the modes of nature carry things out. So even though that's the mechanics, still, where does the mechanics for the modes of nature moving the dead matter come from? Understand? It still comes from Krishna. Just like Indra, he may be moving the clouds and making the rain and the thunderbolts and all this and that, but still, where does he get that potency to do that from? It's still from Krishna. So if you see that, then Indra means those potencies of Krishna. Right, so then you can, by thinking of Indra, you can remember the Lord. Right, does that make sense? So Madhvacharya, then he makes that point, is that all when the Shastras are dealing with the demigods, using demigod names, all these prayers, they're not actually meant for the demigod, because that's just a post. Where did they get that potency? You know, like Agni is everywhere. He sees all things. Where does he get that potency to expand into everywhere and see all things? Right? The wind, he's everywhere. Where does that come from? Because the only one that's everywhere is Krishna. The souls are very small. So he's just working with that aspect of Krishna. Right? Or the, you know, the substance in the way of just your social position, your family, your facilities. That's in Vastu, your land, your house, your furniture, your vehicles. Where does that potency come from? It comes from Krishna. So in other words, Krishna's Vastu, he's Indra, he's Agni, he's Vayu. Like that? Then there's a demigod that takes care of that. So in the same way, the material energy means the material world, that is Krishna. But there's a demigod that's in charge of managing it. But still, its potency to work is that, you know, like the warden. The warden, it's not his building and his money and his power that he's running. He's running it on behalf of the state. So all his potency, even though he's managing it, so you can say, yes, he's the supreme lord of the prison. But the point is he is the lord of the prison. He's not the lord outside the prison. But at the same time, even within the prison, his lordness is still coming from the supreme lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. Both in this life and the next, they who desire something other than spiritual happiness never attain the fulfillment of their desire. Because why? It means you can say, no, but they get what they want. The guy worked hard, he got his house. What is he feeling? What's the drive for getting the house? Just he wants some dead matter? The house represents, you know, a feeling, a concept. You know, I'll have the house and we'll be secure and we'll all live there together peacefully and nice. But when he gets the house, it's just the house. Where is the living together peacefully and interacting and pleasantly? Right? You know, I mean, if you want to show something, okay, means then I can show the thing, right? It means, let's say, I want you to buy something. I can show just the thing itself, or I can show some people that are happy with that thing, right? Which will be more effective, right? The people. Because that's the reason you want the thing. But when you just get the thing and you just have the thing, you won't be satisfied. So So in other words, they never fulfill their desire because that concept is Krishna. So unless they're always meditating on that. So now he's got the house, and now he doesn't get that feeling. So now what is going to be the natural view of this person having gotten the house? So now that whole that romantic elements of the house is not his goal anymore. It's not his drive. And when he's there in the house, just the reality of the house and its bigness and the taxes and the cleaning and the mess the kids make and what the wife wants more stuff. It's like the house costs a certain amount, but it's probably an equal amount is what it costs to, furnish it. And make all those adjustments and changes that just aren't quite right and totally unlivable, right? The other people lived in it for 20 years and they were quite fine, but now you can't even live there at all without changing something, right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So all that reality is there. What is he going to think now? His goal was, get a house, I'll be happy, but he's gotten the house and it didn't actually fulfill that desire. What's the point? Yes, they'll start speculating, or then something else. So why isn't it? So is it this house isn't making me happy? Is it houses don't make me happy? Is the house fine, but the family is the problem? You know, maybe the house is great, but the neighborhood or the timing, something, you understand? So it may take him on to work hard for something else. It may take him into Gyan, who he just gives up. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it won't fulfill the desire. And it can. The real spiritual desires are covered by material illusion. They are like persons searching for buried treasure, not knowing the location of the treasure. They walk over it again and again, but never obtain it. Right? If you just say, there's treasure, yeah, then wherever you. They are always near the spiritual realm, but material illusion prevents them from entering it. It's just a matter of consciousness. Wherever you are, that's the thing. Time, place, and the circumstance, it doesn't matter. Because the spiritual world, time, place, and circumstance are all connected to Krishna. So if you connect time, place, and circumstance to Krishna, you're in the spiritual world. Yes?
In the Bhagavad Gita class, the speaker referred to me as a bouncer of Krishna.
Yeah.
Stops you from entering the party if you're not qualified.
Yeah. That's, because you don't want to go into the spiritual and bother. That's why the apasampradayas. The problem is, that's why we say that, because you can say no, but it's just 13. It can't be spiritual, because the point is this bona fide qualifications to enter the spiritual world. So if you don't have those, then Maya will bounce you into something else, right? That's all. So the thing is then you think you're fine. You know? That's the thing, is that they can't have, because it's just, the point is pure devotion will get you in the spiritual world. So if you don't have pure devotion, you can't have spiritual life. You have something else, you have materialism. That's all. It's just, you can call it whatever you want. You know, it's like the little kid has a cardboard box, father brought home some groceries in this cardboard box. So the mom's taking it out, putting it on the floor. He takes the box, sits inside. He's Formula One car racer here. Like that. So the thing, you can call it whatever you want, but it doesn't mean that it's not just a box. Does that make sense? So in their mind, it's spiritual, and they're getting all kinds of benefits, but it's just a box. So that's why it's very exact. If it's not Shuddha Bhakti, it's Maya. It's that simple. It's not that, well, maybe it's a little of this, a little bit of that, what do you call it? Best of both worlds. No. It's either Maya Krishna or it's Maya. And Krishna defines how it's Krishna. You can't make it up. The Supreme Personality of Godhead resides in the hearts of the living entities. And for this reason, he is known as Hridayam, which means the person, Ayam, in the heart, Hridi. A person constantly aware of the Lord's presence in his heart, attains the spiritual world. Right, so then Hridayam, which means the person, Ayam, in the heart, Hridi. When such a soul leaves the present material body, enters the effulgent spiritual world. His original spiritual form is manifest there. He is named soul. He is immortal and fearless. He is named Satya, the truth. Right? Because he's truth, because he's real. The soul is real, therefore is truth. The whole spiritual world is truth. So it's not that just he's truth and nobody else, or he is everything. No, it's just... The word satyam contains three syllables, sa, I, and yam. I'm going to break down satya. That's fine. Sat refers to the immortal, supreme personality of Godhead, who is always free from the cycle of repeated birth and death. And I refers to the individual soul, spirit soul, who may become subject to the cycle of birth and death. Yam refers to that process that brings the individual soul into contact with the Supreme Person. A person aware of these facts attains the spiritual world. Well, that's the words you use?
Sat is Bhagavan. Bhakti is the process. Yam is Bhakta.
You're just saying that, or there was some...
No, but that's also a common, set of three.
Okay. Well, you have the... Yeah, it means what? Sadhya, sadhaka, and sadhana.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's using that. Okay.
So where we see, in first verse of Bhagavatam, param satyam being the same meaning.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's param satyam, so that means... That attains the personality of Godhead. So it also means Lord is internal potency in the jiva. So it's like Om, A-U-N-M. Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of all the worlds. He is the eternal boundary which day, night, old age, death, lamentation, piety, and impiety do not cross. Sins turn from him. He is free from sin. A blind man crossing the boundary into the spiritual world becomes free from blindness. A person wounded by material sufferings becomes free from them. And a person burning in the pain of repeated birth and death also becomes free from suffering by crossing the boundary into this his realm. Crossing beyond the days and nights of material time, the spiritual realm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally manifested. So you can see this is all Vedic language we've been going through. So how they give examples and all that, you can see is that each thing they're doing, they're putting a very a major philosophical concept into a poetic term, or a poetic, what do you call it? Not just a sentence, but an aphorism like that, yes. So that's the difficulty is that, in the Vedic, it's basically aphorism. So it's natural to be Vedanta Sutra being the essence of the Vedic philosophy. It's just giving everything in aphorisms, right? Just, it means in the sutras, it doesn't have to be poetic. Well, the Vedic verse is poetic. Then in the classical Sanskrit, then you maintain the poetic element, but you basically try to bring out all the various aspects, right? Here devotees use the word unpack, but I think unpack is a very 90-ish term.
Flesh out the details.
Yes, flesh out it. So, in other words, all the different aspects are brought out.
Elucidated.
Elucidated.
would be too.
Huh? Elucidatory. Right? So that's the difference between the two. Right? The Vedic will keep everything in aphorisms, because the idea is that the Vedic has to deal with everybody. So either you just take it directly as it is, you know, the karmi, you know, oh yes, then it means if you took this as it was just by the words, what would be your interpretation for a materialist? All your desires would be fulfilled, you know, you live forever, all your old age, you know, disease, all these will go away. Where will that be? Yeah, the heavenly planets. Right? Now the Jnani, he takes this, and what will it mean? It means Brahman. Right? Because once you attain Brahman, then you're free from, you know, misery. Once you attain Brahman, you're free from death. Once you attain the heavenly planets, you're free from misery. You're free from death. Understand? So they'll interpret it like this. But for the devotees, they know it's talking about the spiritual world. Because for the materialists, they don't know about the spiritual world. They have no entrance, because Maya bounces there.
Joe, you will also see the reference to the person in the heart as Paramatma?
Yeah, just as Paramatma. And so then, it's either he'll move forward into bhakti, or back into karma and jnana. You know, either into mystic powers or into merging. So in other words, if you don't know about pure devotional service by contacting pure devotees, you cannot have anything spiritual. You can have ideas, because the soul by nature is spiritual. So there'll be some ideas, but it won't actually happen. You know what I'm saying? That's why the devotees can take, they, because they're coming in that line of pure devotion, they can take whatever position the soul is in, find the elements, you know, essential elements, and then show them the path of pure devotion, right, from their situation. Right? But for the materialist, it's not possible. So this idea, the sentimental idea, oh no, but they're nice, they're great, but they're not, oh, but they're so spiritual, you know, they go to nice places, they go out to, you know, out in the forest, and then, you know, live a natural life, and, you know, spend the time meditating and doing yoga and eating nice, you know, how you say, whole, you know, I can't think of it. It's just the words don't come to mind. Yeah. But it's just, they do things that are harmonious with nature and, you know, all these kind of things. So they're very spiritual. No, they're just, you know, pleasant. You know, it means deers live out in the forest and eat grass. So, you know, that's also nice, pleasant. You know, chipmunks do that. They eat, you know, nuts, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's still material. Nicer material, but that's what it said. This boundary is lamentation. Piety and impiety doesn't cross. It's only devotion crosses. So being that, no, but we're good, we're nice, you know, we're devotees, so we have to set example of being good, says you can't cross. What does good mean? Good means by their definition, or good mean by God's definition? So if you talk about the definition of here, why you'll cross? You have to have God's definition to cross. Because otherwise, when you get there, then who's going to care that you're saying it's good? No, but how can we go out and how can Krishna go out and dance with the gopis? You know, just imagine the PR, right? What would they do with that? You know, the people, the rumors going around and all that. You know, so Krishna should not dance with the gopis. Now he's the supreme lord. Why should he allow these things to come on him and stuff like that? You understand? Yeah, you know, stuff like that, you know, so, yeah, so that's the problem is that it'll be a problem. So therefore, if you use the mentality from here, you won't be able to appreciate there. The point is, if it's connected to Krishna, it's good. Now, you can say, no, but these things are happening, we're getting some bad PR. That means, so what's the bad PR about? Right? Bad PR is about the part that's not connected to Krishna. So just connect that part to Krishna. Right? So when you connect it, you might find that, you know, you improve it. That's why it's recommended the Vedic, because the Vedic is the culture that is the you know, is naturally connectable.
Acharyas didn't seem problem about PR. It's all PR.
It's all PR. If you know what you do, it's just like this. When the market's going south, people that know the market are making money. Yeah, yeah. It's just like this. Let's say it's going down, it's a recession, everything's down, no one's buying, no one's this and that. So then how much does property cost? Yeah. So you wait till it goes right down, then you buy. And then at some point it'll go back up, and then you have all these properties.
Plus being a zero sum game. 90% of people are losing.
Yeah, because the modern market is not that you're sharing, everybody makes money. It's that there's a limited amount of money. So if someone's making money, someone has to be losing. So it's just the way the market works. So if you know what you're doing, bad PRs, and then after that, then everybody, you know, it's just like this. It's a, just a mundane example. What is this? I think it's a... At one time, Lady Gaga showed up at some kind of public thing wearing a dress out of meat. She got a lot of bad PR out of that. But she does have 50 million people on her, you know, Facebook or Twitter account. So what did it do? It just made it known. If you know what you're doing, there's no such thing. So people that say that, no, it's this, that, means don't know what they're doing. There's no such thing. Because the point is people are aware of your existence. Now, if you go out and show them what you actually do, or explain to them what you're doing, then it turns it around. You already have their attention. You explain it all nicely to someone who's not paying attention, you don't get anything. But because you're in the news because of bad, they're paying attention. Now you explain it nicely. You know, it's just like, let's say that one time Prabhupada was invited to that one show. I don't remember where he went to the show. But, you know, it was one of those shows where the host, all he does is harass whoever he invites to the program. You know? I think they're still popular now, right? They're still going. So he was really known for being a very, you know, good harasser. You know, nobody leaves the show without getting, you know, sufficiently insulted, you know. So he invites Prabhupada to the program. And so people are, I think it's even, I've heard that Prabhupada even you told him about the guy and what kind of program it is. Prabhupada says, oh no, we don't want to go to that. He went anyway. So he knew that, you know, for us, we're talking about how bad the Western culture is and this and that. That was his whole line. You know, the Western culture is bad and this and that, and then, you know, everything about it is just, you know, like this. So when he says, so his opening question is, you know, so what do you think of, you know, America or this and that? And he says, well, no, it says you have some very, you know, basically fine people here. The parents are doing a great job because my students are such nice people. He says, that means so good child means good parent. You know, so here, you know, you have a country full of people who are, you know, like this. The guy didn't know what to do. That was his whole line. So he just said, you know, from then on, he was just, oh, what do you guys do, and this and that. So the whole, you know, whatever it is, you know, that the next 60 minutes or whatever, it went really pleasant. He was just submissive and nice and probably explained everything nicely. And so you know what you're doing, then that's, you know. So it's just, you know, that's professional. That's a profession. Okay. So here we see is that's an exposure to Vedic, you know, the Vedic, you know, how you say, language. It's always in that poetic, slightly aphoristic, like presentation, you know. So it's one, because it's supposed to, for someone intelligent, to spark a question. Like it opens. If he says, you know, it's the eternal realm, then the student may ask, well, what is this eternal realm? And if he asks that, then he should say, you know. So the whole idea is, by throwing out the aphorisms, any intelligent person would ask, what is this? A sentimental person may not. You know, okay, nice, they have faith and they're going along, but an intelligent person would ask, what does this aphorism mean?
So it generates a doubt.
it generates a doubt. Yeah, doubt, not necessarily a misgiving, but it might. If there's misgivings, it may, you know, how you say,
evoke
them. Yeah, or you go in there and, you know, poke around and provoke them. Yeah.
Like that.
So that's, it's just the style, because thing is self-realization means your own journey. So as you ask questions and all that, then you progress. Does that make sense? Yeah. Text 14. Chich chakte para tattvasya swabhavas tri vidha smrita swa swabhavas tata jiva swabhavo mayikas tata. The supreme true spiritual potency has three natures: its own nature, the nature of the individual spirit souls, and the nature of Maya. Right? So the spiritual, what we call spiritual, is the natural swabhav of his, of the Surup Shakti. Right? Serving Krishna is the nature of the Surup Shakti. That manifestation we call the spiritual realm. Right? But this the Chit Shakti is also includes the jivas and Maya. Right? Because it's the complete potency. You have the main potency, you have the shadow of the potency, and you have the junction between the potencies. But its natural is the internal. Mm-hmm. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The supreme true spiritual potency has three natures: its own nature, the nature of the individual spiritual souls, and the nature of Maya. Limitless variety is present in the spiritual nature. The Mayavadi impersonalists do not think variety is present in spirit. They say, variety is present only in Maya. When one renounces Maya and turns to spirit, variety is cast far away. When the individual spirit soul attains its original nature, all varieties disappears and everything becomes one. Right? Very boring. Right? You know? See, what the Mayavadis haven't, they've only caught half of the famous aphorism, right? The aphorism, you can't live with them, you can't live without them, right? So they've only caught the first half, you can't live with them. So therefore, you get rid of Maya, get rid of all variety, everything like that. But once you do that, it gets boring, because you can't live without them. Does that make sense? So that's their weakness.
Yes. I met some Mayavadis once whose goal was to merge into Krishna, and so they would chant their japa while, you know, meditating on a picture of Krishna and Rasalila.
Yeah, no, so it's just different forms of that same, you know, the yogis do, but as merge into that. But the point is who, but what's the nature of Krishna? Because we'll say, oh no, but they're devotees and this and that. But the point is they don't feel the form as, do they feel the form is eternal? You know, what's the whole idea? And then even if they do, then just by merging, then what have you done for him? So then there's no bhakti. You know what I'm saying? Because you can know God, but if without devotion, then, you know, you don't care to interact. Like we see is that the six schools, then they accept the Supreme in some form, but it's not, they're not really worried about them. You know, like we'll see when we get to Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You were telling me about this? Or?
Jaimini.
Yes. The Jaimini, you know, who wrote the Jaimini Sutras, the Karma Mimamsa, he is a great devotee. Like that. But to engage the smartas, the karmis, then to, so that they'll be inspired and keep going in there, you know, to keep themselves in the pious platform, he wrote Karma Mimamsa. But actually he himself is a devotee. So like that, all these other ones, they've been written just to engage the materialistic nature. But it's, you know, because we know Shiva's, you know, is a great devotee. So these are your two top schools, you know, that can defeat all the other ones. So then all these others, then they're also, you know. On what foundation are these ideas of the Mayavadi built? From what root do they grow? The answer is, these ideas are based only on their whims. In what scripture are these ideas described? Right? Where does it say that there should be no variety? And obtaining no variety, then that is the goal. They'll talk about the Supreme as Nirakar, but that doesn't say that Nirakar is perfection. They're just giving that the Supreme has that quality of Nirakar. Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is yes, there's no material qualities, but then it mentions all the other stuff. So you have to take the Supreme as a whole. Right? So, and why would we be coming back to, why would we be coming to this as the end? Right? It means, why end with the Mayavadis?
It's not because that's what he tends to finally get an illusion by.
Yeah, that's one aspect. I'm thinking something a bit broader because it's the conclusion of the whole work.
That all false philosophies are ultimately Mayavada.
Yes, you understand? Because, in other words, that Mayavada element, it goes down into everything. Mm-hmm. Right? It's all one, so it doesn't really matter. So, therefore, you can defeat that, you can defeat all materialism. Right, just here you means the Mayavadis use technical things, use Vedantic elements, fancy words and everything like that. But if you understand the fundamentals, how it's working, then that's how everybody's thinking. Just the Jnanis, because they're Jnanis, then they like the fancy words. And the Karmis then is the same, but he doesn't like the fancy words. You know, unless the fancy words are profit, you know, how you say, facility, you know, like that. Then, you know, prestige. Then those fancy words he's fine with. Right. Yeah, so those are also Mayavadi terms. Right? So that, and the whole thing is whims. The whole material world is based on ignorance. So it's a whim that I can be God. Right? The 1/10,000th tip of the hair. You know, this is the funniest part, right? Okay, internal potency might think I can be God because they're unlimited. Or Maya can think because she's also basically unlimited, though inferior. You know, so that would be even less. But they don't think like that. They just think we're servants of Krishna. Now, the smallest possible particle of spirit that you can have, you know, the jiva, they're thinking I am the unlimited. I am the supreme. Right? So that's where the real fun is. Right? You know, that's what's so funny about it.
The chit is a bit too small.
Hmm?
The chit is a bit too small.
To yeah, yeah. What's going on. Yeah, could be. They're just too small to understand. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sometimes when the person, oh, he's so small, he doesn't understand. You know, so, yeah. Oh. So I guess maybe like that, maybe in the spiritual, they don't have the, they're so small, what to do. You know, they said, rah,
but not so cute.
Yeah, less cute, less cute. Yeah, that's true. Okay, it's based only on their whims, so it's still the mode of ignorance. In what scripture? It's just mental, right? They're thinking that they're being so intellectual. In what scripture are these ideas described? By what chain of logical arguments are they attained? Right? As we saw, anytime you take it, it goes up to a point, and it sounds really good until you actually analyze their analogies and stuff like that, or the end point. What is it called? The end game. Is that okay? The end game just doesn't work. It's the green bird and the green tree, but there's still a green bird and a green tree. Yeah. There's still two.
There's always some logical
fallacy. Yeah, it very much falls apart. That no one can say, okay, what are they based on and how are they attained? That no one can say. In the previously quoted passages of the Chandogya Upanishad, Chandogya is part of Samaveda, I think, we saw a description of spiritual variety. In the spiritual world are present the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the forms of the individual spirit souls, a great variety of places, the moon, sun, and other luminaries, rivers, streams, and many other beautiful and glorious things. A great variety of bliss, taste, rasa are also present in the world of spirit. The nature of the individual soul is that they are the Lord's marginal potency, tatastha. They are between the spiritual and material potencies. The individual souls, therefore, may be under the influence of the Maya potency or under the influence of the spiritual potency. The nature of Maya is that it is a perverted reflection of spirit. The nature of Maya is that it is a perverted reflection of spirit. Yeah. means it looks like the spiritual world, but it's not. Like, because otherwise, the jiva is in the. Where does the jiva decide that they want to be God and be the enjoyer? But around here?
No.
In the spiritual world. So that means if you're going to give them, you know, trick them by giving them something else, it's got to look the same. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, a Hollywood set. It's not real, but it has to look the same. Right? You know, if it was done badly, people would just laugh at it, you know? Huh? Yeah, then it becomes Bollywood. Yeah. Yes. Like that. So the point is it has to be the same. So therefore, it looks like the reflection. I mean, it is the reflection. But that's the point. It's just a reflection. So it looks real. Does that make sense? Because people aren't going, you know, how come there's, you know, two parents? Why aren't there three and a half, you know? Or why are there only five Rosses? You know, why not, you know, 47? You know what I'm saying? It's no, everybody's satisfied with everything. It's just that when they see, become disenchanted with how efficient it is to enjoy, then they get upset and turn to, okay, then there's nothing. But they don't say, no, there's another reality.
Right. On that note, we have a two-armed form, just like Krishna has a two-armed form. We don't have a four-armed form like Krishna. So can you comment on, is it like a uniquely Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding of us being made in the form of the Lord, and that's why we want to imitate and emulate?
No, because it can be also from the Vaikuntha platform. It means there's plenty of people from Vaikuntha that are here also. It means that's why it means once in a day of, it means, yeah. Yeah, once in a day of Brahma, then Swayam Krishna comes. So that means out of 1,000, you know, Dwapara Yugas and Kali Yugas, then he comes to Swayam Krishna and Swayam Chaitanya. So that means 999 are from Vaikuntha. So it just means, the point is you want to enjoy like the Supreme Lord. But here the basic element is how Krishna runs is based on the human society. Right? So even Vaikuntha, which is based on, you know, has the Varnashram element, is still based on human society. Right? Just there's the majesty. So you don't think of it. It means you're in the spiritual world. But how you say, in Vrindavan, then it's not. It's just you're with Krishna. You know it's a transcendental world, but that's not the whole point. It's not the majesty of the transcendental world. It's just this Krishna's place. So they all think as if they're human.
So four arms just display our majesty?
Yes. Right there. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, what's the speciality? Because it's obvious, if you have four arms, there must be something special. The demigods all have forms that have many arms, you know, like that. That's why it also says all the horrible forms of demigods, because they don't look so... All the different forms that they take for doing their work. Because there's the nice aspects of the work, and there's the not nice. So the nice, then those are the ones we always hear about. But in taking care of some of the work, the not so nice is what they deal with. Like Yamaraj, he has a very nice devotional form, but he also has a ghastly form that is, you know, how he deals with those who are
inspiring terror.
Yeah. Yes. Who are not pious. So then he uses that form. You know, he's black with red eyes, and you know, very.
Sickle
and hammer?
Scythe.
Oh, that one. Okay, yeah. It's interesting that they use that, because just in one swing you just cut so much. It's just so death, just, you know. Yeah, if it wasn't that efficient, it'd be really hard, right?
interesting because he comes and knocks on your door. So when it's your time, when your time's up, he comes right to your door and takes you for like, he's going to do this.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Yamadu is not. Okay. They are between the spiritual and material potencies. The individual soul is therefore maybe under the influence of Maya, of the Maya potency, or under the influence of the spiritual potency. The nature of Maya is that it's a perverted reflection of spirit. The individual spirit souls who have turned their faces away from the Supreme Lord must be covered by a gross and subtle material body. It just must. If you turn your away, then that's just what you're going to get. Oh, there was 15. I thought there was only 14. 15. Tishtan napi jaradhare chitsvabhava parayana vartate yo maha bhaga swa svabhava parohisa. Even though he may still reside in the material world, an individual soul intent on receiving his original spiritual nature is very fortunate. In the end, he regains his original spiritual nature. Thus ends Tatra Vivek.
Interesting that word, intent. It's all about intention.
It's all about intent. I mean, that's what language, it's all about intent. That's the one thing that one must always consider, because see, if someone will use a word, you have a definition of that word. You know, and because of that, then you have a specific reaction to it. But at the same time, is if you actually want to have a proper discussion, then you would have to find out the intent that they mean. What do they mean by that word? What does it carry? Because so, whether you actually can, that is the proper reaction or not. Because many times people use either don't know the word or what you were to use, or they use a word that for you has a different meaning, but their intent is appropriate. So if you're working on intent, then that's where you can get the maximum. So when someone says something, what's the intent of why they're saying it? So if their intent is good, then you take that as the aspect and don't worry about what they've said. But their intent is bad, doesn't matter how nicely the words are presented. But it means if they're trying to explain something in the, you know, the bad, yeah, it's just, yeah.
I was reading yesterday about two words, exegesis and eisegesis.
Exegesis?
And eisegesis. Exegesis means trying to understand what the actual message of Scripture is. Like Srila Prabhupada's quote was that exegesis of Shastra. And eisegesis is imposing your own understanding upon them, not actually trying to find out what is there.
Okay.
You have your mindset and you're trying to see that in the Scripture.
Okay, yeah. Well, what we see is that seems to be specifically what the bogus philosophies are doing, the six systems, is that they are, what is it? Esogesis.
Isogesis.
And that's what Jesus with a G or
yeah,
with a
G.
Not with a J. Okay.
The adjective is exegetical, eisegetical.
Okay.
Exegesis. Eisegesis. Exegesis is similar to hermeneutics. How to understand
exegesis.
The problem. How to understand the problem and the message.
Okay. Okay. So one is what is the how they're interpreting, and the one is trying to understand how they interpret, why their interpretation. Yeah, because if you do like that, then it works very nicely. But at the same time, is if it's obvious, then that's one thing. Then you try, or you ask. The other is, or you ask anyway, because then when they explain it, because sometimes it also can be unnerving to people when you use that method. And even they don't know what they're trying to do. You know, so they're talking in a certain way with a certain tone. And so then that means a certain thing. So when you talk to them based on their intent, they're going on what they think is what they're doing. And so they think that you're not talking about what they're talking about. So
that also.
one has to work, you know, in other words, this in the art of what is it, exegesisism, or how to exegesisize, you know, the art, or what is it, the
exegesisize,
or exegesis, Jesus authority.
I thought the two words were interesting.
Yeah.
Among the six systems is all the eisegesis, people trying to show their ideas.
Yeah. They just take that and interpret it. That's generally the thing, is what you get is when you get these issues come up. You know, especially when they're dealing with the pranamoya platform. I mean, it means the same thing if they're dealing with the dharma, but that just takes a more pious background. But you know, they're simply taking as their idea of equality, their idea of harmony, or you know, whatever is the good quality they're looking for. But then they're trying to interpret. They're putting their own interpretation on, rather than what is the natural interpretation.
The same approach can be used with Shri Prabhupada's words.
Yes.
Pull something out of them.
Yeah. What's that famous word? Heretofore, or...
Henceforth.
Yes.
I suggest.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So then one day we finished. So we may have to... Oh. I guess so. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananti.
Thank you for all the classes this year, Maharaj.
Yeah.
You're very grateful.